Since its founding in 2009, the Nonpartisan Public Religion Research Institute has been an invaluable source of comprehensive data and analysis regarding Americans' views, positions, and beliefs. And for just about as long, PRRI CEO Dr. Robert P. Jones has brought insights about the Institute's various findings to State of Belief Radio listeners. Many, perhaps most, of his waking hours have been spent in the seemingly endless vaults at the Public Religion Research Institute working on a book that needed writing. And now that it's done, this past Tuesday saw the release of the book, The End of White Christian America. And I am truly delighted to have the author of that book, Dr. Robert P. Jones, with us once again on State of Belief Radio. Robbie, congratulations. You've got it done, and it's simply terrific. Welcome back to State of Belief.
Oh, thanks, Walton. Really glad to be back, and glad to be unchained and released from the cellar of writing writing for so long. That's a very apt description, I think, of what it sometimes felt like writing the book. But I'm glad to see it be out there in the world now.
The End of White Christian America. How big a change is this for our nation, and what does it mean for those who simply refuse to face this change?
Well, you know, it's an enormous change, and what's, I think, striking about it and what really made me write the book is that it's a change that in many ways has been right in front of us, but not one that I think had been identified. So just to give you, you know, a sense of it, I mean, we've all known that the country's been shifting in terms of its demographics, becoming more diverse, the younger generation's more diverse than older generations, and the demographers have been telling us, you know, first they told us it was going to be 2050, when the country was going to be a majority minority nation, a non-white nation. Then that number got moved up to 2042 as the changes have been accelerating. But I think what people miss is that we had actually already crossed a very significant threshold, and that is we had moved just during the last decade from being a majority white Christian country to a minority white Christian country. And that shift, I think, helps really explain a lot of the visceral reactions we're seeing in today's politics, a lot of the anxieties that we're seeing, particularly among conservative white Christians in the country. And just to give you two quick numbers, at the beginning of Barack Obama's presidency, the country was 54% white and Christian, so still solidly majority. Our latest numbers at the end of 2015 show that number has slipped to 45%. So just during Barack Obama's presidency, we've gone from being a 54% white Christian nation to a 45% white Christian nation.
That is amazing.
Really, the 1990s were the time when we really began to see these trends accelerate. You know, it was important to remember that in the 1990s, when you asked people about their religious affiliation, less than 10% of the country in the early 1990s claimed no religious affiliation at all, and the country was still even majority white and Protestant. But what we begin to see over time, like today, for example, 23% of the country claims no religious affiliation whatsoever. So that's part of the story, is this kind of people actually leaving formal affiliations with religion, and that has happened disproportionately among white religious Americans. And so we really do see it beginning in the 1990s, but then really accelerating over these last 10 years. The other thing to say, I think, is that there's been a couple of important symbols. Barack Obama's presidency, he obviously is the first African-American president who obviously doesn't come from the world of white Christian America. One more just in 2010, in the same period, that the U.S. Supreme Court lost its last Protestant justice. Historically, 91 of the 112 justices that have ever sat on the court have been Protestant, and we lost our last Protestant in 2010. And if Merrick Garland is confirmed, we would have a Supreme Court consist of 5 Catholic justices and 4 Jews.
Well, when do you think the public started really seeing the effects of this shift?
Well, you know, you and I have talked a lot about the rise of the Christian right in the 1980s and the 1990s. And I think with the benefit of hindsight, we can see that more was going on there than just a reaction to this, what we're seeing as the kind of libertine 1960s. You know, that sort of shock to the system was real, but it sort of set off, you know, a number of other shockwaves. So the Christian right, I think, was kind of one piece of that reaction. What's different, I think, today is that, you know, in the 80s and 90s, I mean, the kind of phrase, the moral majority, was used, you know, by the Christian right. And they had a way of kind of making a claim that they had their fingers on the center of American culture and that they were really standing for mainstream America. And I think what's different today is that when we see conservative Christians in the public sphere, even they know they can't make that argument anymore. You know, so the country, again, so one other thing is the same period, the country's gone from being, in 2008, a country that only 4 in 10 supported gay marriage, and now 53% support gay marriage. And so that's another sort of big cultural shift. And I think what has changed is that for the kind of conservative Christian movement that's sort of overwhelmingly made up of white Christians, they have sort of sensed that the country has sort of moved in a way that not only demographically, but culturally, they're no longer at the center of where the country is. And that dynamic, I think, has really set the stage well for kind of where we are in the campaign that we're seeing today.
You know, we have a tendency, and right now it's on steroids, to blame almost everything that happens on politics. In this case, this is not a consequence of politics nearly so much as it is a phenomenon that has changed politics. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah, you know, I think if we're, you know, we're thinking about Donald Trump's rise, I think, you know, within the Republican Party, I think it's not really possible to think about that being a reality if he hadn't stepped onto the stage just as the curtain was coming down on the last act of, you know, white Christian America. And I think it's that sense of what we're seeing in the survey data among white evangelicals and white Christians generally is this deep sense of nostalgia for the past, a real sense of anxiety and vulnerability about the country changing, and their vision that they had, I think, of what America is and what the country is, they feel that, I think, slipping away. And I think Trump's slogan, for example, of make America great again, the power that that last word again has is really dependent on these cultural changes that we've been talking about and the sense of anxiety that many white conservative Christians feel around those changes.
Rami, do you see segments of our population that are really embracing these changes effectively?
Well, you know, one of the things I do in the book is I begin the book with an obituary for white Christian America, and I end the book with a eulogy where I try to kind of address where different groups are in reacting to the end of this era in American public life. And, you know, I do think there are some groups that are trying to sort this out. I mean, the mainline Protestant churches, you know, the Episcopalians, the kind of more liberal, progressive wing of white Protestantism, has had a few more decades to deal with this because their decline actually came more in the 70s and 80s and 90s and has, you know, that now stabilized a bit. So they've had a few more decades to kind of think about what it means to kind of move from the center of power to being one among many groups at the table. I think the group that is struggling with this are really white evangelical Christians who really have only seen their numbers declining in the last 10 years. So before that, there was this sense that white evangelicals were looking at their more liberal brethren and blaming liberal theology for their decline. Mm-hmm. And now what we see is what the real story is that they just experienced the decline a few decades before white evangelicals have. And so we now see the same pattern taking root among white evangelicals. Figures like Russell Moore are at the forefront of trying to figure out how they can accept their less central place, really, in American culture. It's a real struggle, and I think that's one of the things we're going to see play out in the election cycle this year.
My own sense is, Robbie, that white Americans are not going easily into that good night. And so it makes me ask, is what's happening among white Americans and some fear because of what's happening, does this relate at all to issues like the white-on-black killing that we're seeing even in the community that is called and empowered to protect people? Is that a part of this as well?
Yeah, no, I spent a whole chapter, you know, trying to unpack race and racial perceptions and how that's playing a role here. And with Alton Sterling, with Michael Brown, with, you know, these other killings of African-American men by police, we do see a very dramatic difference. Part of this is about, like, what is the perception? And we had a survey question where we asked, do you think the recent killings of African-American men by police are part of a broader pattern of how police treat African-Americans, or do you think they're simply isolated incidents? And what's remarkable is that we've asked this question a number of times. The same pattern always emerges. About 8 in 10 African-Americans say this is absolutely part of a pattern of the way police treat African-Americans. But when you look at whites overall, only about 45% of whites agree with that statement. So it's about half as many whites agree with that statement. If you break it down even further, it's white Christians, actually, both mainline Protestants and evangelicals, who are less likely to believe this, that it's part of a pattern, than whites who claim no religious affiliation. About two-thirds of whites who claim no religious affiliation agree with African-Americans that this is part of a broader pattern. But there is something about sort of white Christian affiliation that is much less likely to perceive these patterns. And among evangelicals, for example, it's only about 3 in 10 evangelicals who say that this is part of a pattern. The overwhelming majority say, no, these are just isolated incidents. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's hard to sort of get to solutions when you can't even come to an agreement on the reality of the problem.
Yeah. Robbie, newspapers have been called the first draft of history. And then, of course, a decade or two down the road, we're able to better understand broad changes and the significance of events in a way that's not possible any sooner. This book exists in between those two spaces. You had the time to compile the kind of research that's really not available anywhere else, but at the same time, you're writing about changes while those changes are still happening. How did you handle that unique challenge?
No, it's a great question. And in writing, a book, so the trend date is easy. You can just kind of look back and do the analysis. I think what's hard is, so I wrapped the text a year ago, or almost a year ago, and the challenge was that Trump, for example, had just announced his candidacy when the text was actually locked for the book. So the book doesn't actually mention Trump anywhere, but what I've sort of found, I mean, thankfully, is I do think helping to understand what stage was set for Trump when he did step onto it, I think is the role that the book plays. And thankfully, it's been a helpful lens for, I think, understanding Trump and his appeal to nostalgia, his appeal to restoring power to groups that have been, pushed to the side, and the anti-immigrant rhetoric from Trump, I think, also fits into this real sense of preserving a kind of white America that has a really strong appeal to some disaffected, white Christian voters.
In your work, it is imperative that you lean heavily on reason and objectivity. After writing this book and going through all of the educational and intellectual calisthenics you had to do to go through it, I'm interested about your feeling. Are you hopeful or not hopeful about what's next for our country?
I think I'm hopeful about the long run. I think in many ways we have been here in some ways before, in some ways we haven't, but we have been in a place where we have had to integrate Catholics into mainstream America. We had to integrate Jews into mainstream America. And there was some seriously ugly periods of American history when that was happening. And then we seem to have gotten to a place. I think in the short term, I'm worried that we may see some real flashpoints. And I think Trump's rise in the Republican Party is exhibit A of that. I think I'm hopeful that those are, in some ways, the last gasp around a cultural shift, and that we will, I think as Americans have often done, we will find our way in this new reality. But I do think it's going to take, the groups that have previously been in power, namely white Protestant Christians, taking seriously that they don't own the table anymore, that they're basically going to be guests at a communally owned table. They're going to use, a metaphor. That's going to be a real shift, and I think it's not going to come easily. So I think in the long run, I'm hopeful. In the short run, we may be in for something that may be quite a bumpy ride.
Dr. Robert P. Jones is CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute. Robbie, it's an old cliche that there's a big difference between information and knowledge, You've always been great at gathering information and turning it into knowledge. But without wanting to embarrass you, I can safely say this book goes one step further. It turns that knowledge into wisdom at the exact time that we need it most. So congratulations again, my friend, and thanks as ever for taking time to be with us on State of Belief Radio.
It's very kind, Weldon, and I much appreciate it. I'm so happy to be back with you again. Thank you.